deal. And now, ladies and gents, it's time for Sherry Marcucci, your hostess, with your palace, your place, here at WATR.
Good morning. Good morning. Wow, that was quite an introduction, Tom.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Well, I cannot believe it's a whole brand new spanking year, 2016, for Your Palace, Your Place. And so excited. We've had a lot of good feedback to the show and people that are listening and saying they're enjoying kind of the mix of theater talk and pop culture. And of course, they love, love, love the food, the restaurant segments. And I just want to tell you that, you know, we're trying to start out on the straight and narrow for the new year. So for this edition of Your Palace, Your Place, we're not having a restaurant segment, partly in deference to everybody trying to, you know, kind of be a little more circumspect when it comes to what we're consuming, myself included, but also one of our guests on today's show. Food is actually pivotal or a central theme in her life, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit. So, you know, this edition is all about new things. And one of the new things at the Palace, Tom, I don't know if you've been aware of this, but one of the new things at the Palace is that we have a new show we just announced that went on sale on New Year's Eve, and boy, is it timely.
What is it?
It is the satirical comedy troupe Capital Steps.
They're very funny.
They are very funny, and boy, do they have fodder to create material from with this upcoming presidential election. So that show is coming April 7th. Like I said, it just went on sale on New Year's Eve. And so there's plenty of seats to be had, although it did do a brisk on sale business, I have to say. People who are astute about politics and like to laugh, this is your show. And again, there's so much material for the troupe to create material from. So I think it's going to be a very, very entertaining show. They do shows all over. They're former congressional aides and people who have worked in Washington. So they have kind of the insider's scoop on things. And then they create some satire, sort of SNL-ish, but probably a little less fresh. but very smart comedy. So if that's your thing, you want to get tickets to that. And by the way, this is Your Palace, Your Place, the show brought to you by the Palace Theater in Waterbury, Connecticut. And I'm your host, Sherry Marcucci. I do want to also talk about two things coming up in January. You still have time, and we're going to have an interview a little bit later this morning with a woman who plays one of the key roles in the upcoming national tour of Ragtime, the musical coming to the Palace January 22nd and 23rd. I like to say this is the thinking person's musical. This really, there's a lot of heart to this. This isn't your let's put on a show musical, although it's got beautiful, lush music and music you'll remember and songs you'll remember. But the story and the message is really timely for what I think we are experiencing in our country today, all over the world, actually. And I think this is one you do not want to miss. So that's coming up. And right after that, on Wednesday, January 27th, we have Lidia Bastianich in the house. An intimate conversation with, hosted by, or moderated, I should say, by Faith Middleton of NPR's Food Schmooze. Lidia is, of course, the wonderful Italian chef who has many restaurants in New York City. Her son Joe has become a celebrity chef as well and has restaurants, including one right in New Haven called Terry. So Lidia is going to be in the house with us talking about her story, telling Italian stories from Italy about her Italian upbringing and childhood and sharing her love of food and her passion for food and how she's parlayed it into this wonderful lifestyle and life for both herself and her family. So those are coming up. If you're interested in tickets for either of those shows, palacetheaterct.org or call us at 203-346-2000. And now I want to introduce a woman who I'm just fascinated. When I read your bio, and I'm talking with Lauren and talking to and going to introduce Lauren Yarger. Lauren's bio just blew me away. And, you know, we were talking before the show started, and we have some mutual friends and people we know who we've both worked with. But let me just read a little bit from your bio first. She's a reviewer. First and foremost, we're going to talk about that. No, I shouldn't say first and foremost, but certainly a big piece of what she does. She reviews Broadway and off-Broadway theater in New York, as well as in Connecticut, so regional theater and local theater. She writes for her own blog or website, correct, called Reflections in the Light, the Connecticut Arts Connection, then, and the Manchester Journal Enquirer. Her reviews are syndicated, and she also contributes to BroadwayWorld.com. In addition to that, she is a voting member of the Drama Desk. This is pretty impressive stuff. The Outer Critics Circle, which I think Barbara Davitt from WATR is also a member of.
Yes.
Yes. The American Theater Critics Association and the Connecticut Critics Circle. So what she has to say obviously has some weight. And then what I really found interesting is that in her own right, she's a playwright and a theater producer and a member of a ton of professional theatrical organizations, including the League of Professional Women, the LAMS, which we're going to talk about a little bit, the Drama League, and the Episcopal Actors Guild. And she's also just, add to the mix, Ben, worked in arts management for both the Bushnell Masterwork Productions and the Hartford Symphony Orchestra. And she's a writer and a book reviewer for the Publishers Weekly. Oh, my God, what haven't you done, Lauren? Lauren, first of all, welcome.
Well, thank you.
That is quite a bio. But I think why I wanted our audience to kind of know some of your background is so they understand, A, what someone brings to the table who is and we're going to talk about the reviewing aspect first, who reviews Connecticut theater or professional theater for that matter anywhere, what you bring to the table, what your background is, and that what you have to say has a frame of reference. You know what you're talking about. It's not just somebody who says, oh, I want to write, so let me just go out. And you actually have quite a resume. Let's start with, how did that begin? How did you start reviewing theater?
Well, it was, I'm in my seventh year doing it now,
okay.
Something like that. My background was journalism. I was a newspaper editor and reporter, so.
Ah, okay. Well, that was left out. That's interesting.
Well,
was that in Connecticut?
How old I am to keep putting all that on my resume.
Was that in Connecticut?
No, it was in Rhode Island.
Okay.
And, all right. So I did that for a while, and that was always my background, was journalism, and I love theater. I've always been involved with theater. Grew up across from New York City, going to Broadway all my life, and all my friends are in theater. You know, it always has been a part of my life. But people would say to me, "Why don't you review?" And I thought, I don't know how to do that because journalism, you know, reporting is very unbiased. You're supposed to be anyway. It was in my day. You weren't supposed to have an opinion.
Right.
You put your own opinions aside and reported what was happening. And this was very different. You're supposed to give an opinion. And I didn't really know if I knew how to do that. I'd done editorial writing, but that's different too because you're speaking for the paper.
Right.
You're not really giving your own
It's not your own
opinion.
Personal opinion, right? Right.
So anyway, it happened that when I was working for Masterwork Productions, which was a Christian performing arts organization.
Oh, okay.
We got requests.
And that's in Connecticut.
That was in Connecticut.
Okay.
Based here, yeah. And we got requests all the time from people all over the country, really, because they knew that I went to Broadway and that I was the theater person. You know, well, what should I see? I'm coming into the city. What should I see? I've read the review, but I can't tell if it's appropriate for my young children or if it's appropriate to bring my, you know, mother-in-law to those types of questions.
Okay.
And so we started to see that there was a need for reviews that would give that type of information.
Okay. So to see if it meshed with someone's maybe spiritual outlook?
Exactly.
Values?
The show may be great. It may have won the Tony Award last year, but, you know, the subject matter may be something that, you know, every family has to decide on their own what is appropriate
Absolutely.
For them.
Absolutely.
There's nowhere to really find that information. So I started to think, well, maybe I should think about this. And I had a friend who is a colleague still. She's a theater reviewer. And I went with her to see some shows from time to time. And we happened to go to one. And she turned to me and said, you should do this. You should be doing this reviewing. And I said, oh, that's so funny you should say that because I've been thinking about this. And she said, do it right now.
And so, wow.
So I pulled out a pad and I reviewed that show. And that's how it started.
Okay. And so for those listening, though, that now, so you reviewed the show. And then what? How did you get somebody to publish it?
Well, Masterworks, that company that I was working for, saw the need for reviews, so they were very willing to have a whole arm of the organization focused on that. So we began the Reflections in the Light site.
Okay.
And went from there. The best thing I ever did was I went to the O'Neill National Critics Institute here in Connecticut.
It's in Waterford.
Okay. It's a training, a 2-week training program for critics. And it's the only one I know of like it.
Now, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's really interesting because I had never heard of that.
It's amazing. It's the best professional development thing I've ever done in my life.
Wow. It's intense and colleagues.
They bring in all of the best theater reviewers from around the country. Chris Jones, who's in Chicago, is the head of it now. They come in and you go and critique theater here in Connecticut and other things now. When I went, it was just theater. Now I believe they do food, restaurant critiques, things like that. They've broadened the range. But when I was there, it was just theater. And so we would go to, you know, Goodspeed or Seven Angels, someplace that was local to Waterford. And also the shows that are happening as part of the National Playwrights Festival and the Musical Festival at the O'Neill.
Yes.
We would review those.
And that's in the summer, isn't that?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. And so we would go and review, and then you sit in this group with some critic, you know, from, you know, some, you know, very, you know,
prestigious,
nationally known critic sits there.
Okay.
And you read your review out loud, and the group critiques it, and it's very intense.
Wow. You've got to have a little bit of a strong shell of armor there, I would think.
Well, you get a little taste of what it's like to be... to have people
That's
critique,
true.
What you're doing.
That's
so.
True. That's yeah. true. Well, let's talk about that because, you know, there's always somebody that likes something and somebody who doesn't like it so much. And I know myself having done some community theater and, you know, people, on the other side of the lights, the people on stage sometimes, you know, they don't always like what they read. Let's be honest. So how does, I think my question, I'm trying to articulate it, is for the audience to know that you don't set out to bash something. That isn't your intent.
No.
So talk about that a little bit. What's the intent of the review? What is your goal when you do this?
I think that, you know, I mean, when it comes down to it, bottom line is I'm a big fan. I'm a theater lover from both sides of the stage. I have produced, I have written for the theater, so I know what that's like as far as putting the show on for people to come see. But I also love being in the audience and watching. I kind of go to most things expecting that I'm going to like them. Every once in a while, that's not the case. There may be a show that I've seen in the past that I hate it. And so if I'm having to go see that again to review it, it's a little harder to go in thinking, you know, oh, I'm going to love this because I know I didn't like it the last time.
Right, right.
But
that's a distinction, too, I think, between the material and how it's produced.
Oh, definitely.
You know, there's a difference between, you know, what was written and if you like or don't like that. Like, I don't like so much the light fluffies. I like the heavier, like Ragtime, I can't wait to see.
Uh-huh.
Because I like those kinds of musicals with a message. Or I loved a straight play. But, you know, the light and fluffy, they're okay for me. But, you know, so...
But I try really hard not to be prejudiced that way, even if I haven't liked it before, because I have been surprised. Every once in a while, you know, there's something. There was one play in particular that I had seen that I thought was awful.
Okay.
It was just awful. And so did everyone else in the theater. In fact, it was one of the biggest mass exoduses at intermission I've ever seen. I mean, people walking out.
Can you say what it was?
It was Stones in His Pockets.
Oh, okay.
Which was on Broadway many years ago.
Okay.
At the Bushnell, came through on the tour. And
okay.
I just thought it was horrible. And so did the entire audience.
Okay.
So several years ago, they announced it at Yale Rep on their season.
And
I thought,
please,
do I have to see that again? I just didn't get it. It was mm-hmm. one of those things. And it was fabulous. So, it was all a direction.
You know, and I always think about that, like, you have the same material, same words. How does someone make it so distinctly different? Like you're saying, you saw it once, you hated it, you saw it again with another director, and you loved it.
It was amazing.
Now, how does
really
that happen,
wonderful.
Though? You've been on both sides of the aisle. How does that happen?
It's the interpretation. You know, it's how the play is going to be presented. Some
yeah.
plays don't read well. Like, if you're just reading the play, you sit there and you think, I don't see this. But someone takes it, and their interpretation, when they put it on stage, brings it to life.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happened with this.
Yeah.
The original one just didn't
And they put the emphasis on one thing and not another. They're using the same words, though. That's what so blows
it's
my mind.
It's how you deliver the words, too.
Yes.
I mean, the actors
yes.
were very excellent and brought.
Okay. And a director can bring that to the surface.
That's
and
the key.
Yeah. Lauren, I wish I could talk to you for like an hour. Because we have not even touch the surface, but I see that time-wise we're really kind of moving toward the need to take a break and move to our next segment.
Wow.
And I know you came such a long way. You live in East Granby and you live far, Simsbury, wherever you live. I know you came a long way. So I hope that you will come back some other time.
Absolutely.
Even if we talk to you over the phone, if that's easier for you, but this is just not enough for me. I hope the audience feels the same way, because I'm so fascinated by this side of things, and we don't often get to hear that and learn about that. So thank you so very much for being here.
And
what's a must-see in Connecticut coming up on the landscape in Connecticut Theater?
Oh,
what are
gosh.
You thinking?
Well, there are a lot of good things.
Besides what's coming to the Palace Theater,
of course, which is, by the way, my favorite Connecticut theater, I don't mind saying. I'm not being paid to say that on your program.
Thank
but
you.
It's just so beautiful.
Thank you.
I love the
Thank
palette.
You, and thank you very much. We appreciate that.
I would say, real quickly, Anastasia at Hartford Stage.
Ooh, okay.
Don't miss that.
So, Anastasia, Hartford Stage, Lauren Yarger, such a pleasure to finally meet you, even though I've communicated with you online many times. But thank you again for being with us.
Thank you.
All right. And we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with Kate Turner, the actor who plays Mother in the upcoming production of Ragtime, coming to the Palace in 2 weeks.
Waterbury Palace, your palace, your place. Waterbury Palace Theater, your palace, your place. The Palace Theater, your palace, your place.
Shows for the whole family.
Waterbury Palace, your place. Waterbury Palace Theater, your palace, your place.
Does your business banker actually spend time at your business, learning about it firsthand? At Ion Bank, they do. Their business bankers spend more time out of their office and into your business, understanding it so they can give you ideas that work harder in your real world. And they make decisions locally so you get action fast. Business banking is all kinds of easier at Ion Bank or ionbank.com. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Hey, this is Tom Shute.
And I'm Allison Demers.
We're together every weekday morning on WATR 1320 AM with the Tom Shute and You program, now featuring Allison Demers.
Join me for your 1320 news, weather, sports, and traffic updates.
Plus, we'll have lots of lifestyle info, contests, birthdays, your favorite good time oldies, and more.
Tom Shute and Allison Demers.
And sometimes we might get into a little trouble. I'm just saying. On WATR and WATR.com. It is 9:30. 8:30, 1320 AM, WATR. We have 28 degrees outside our studios. This time and temperature is brought to you by the Savings Bank of Danbury.
Consolidate with a great rate. Pay off high-interest credit card debt with a Savings Bank of Danbury home equity line of credit. Apply online at sbdanbury.com or call 844-SBD-BANK. Savings Bank of Danbury, Connecticut's local bank. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Good morning, Tom, here in our Waterbury area. Some wintry weather in a few pockets tonight. It's not going to be heavy. It's not going to be a lot of precipitation widespread, but because of the type and the locations, which will be sporadic, it could be on the dangerous side. Northern county areas, a winter weather advisory begins 7 this evening till 8 tomorrow morning. Northern Fairfield, northern New Haven counties. Clouds come in today near 40. Tonight, a little bit of drizzle develops, and some of that could be pockets of freezing drizzle the further north you travel, 30 to 35. That drizzle becomes occasional showers tomorrow, low 40s. Rain on Sunday morning, some heavy at times, tapering to showers, breezy, mild to low 50s, and mostly sunny, colder near 35 Monday, and again on Tuesday. This is WATR meteorologist Bill Jackwoman.
9:31 and 28 degrees. WATR 1320 AM Friday morning. Sherry Marcucci is with us.
New possibilities. The Palace Theater, your palace, your place.
Shows for the whole family.
Waterbury Palace, your palace, your place. Waterbury Palace Theater. Your palace, your place.
And we're back with Your Palace, Your Place. I'm Sherry Marcucci, and we have on the line our next guest, who is an actor who plays one of the key roles in the upcoming production of Ragtime, the national tour, which is coming to the Palace Theater January 22nd and 23rd. We have online Kate Turner. Good morning, Kate.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you know what? I forgot to... Hello?
Hello?
Okay, I forgot to put my headset on there.
Oh.
How are you this morning?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm well. I'm well. And thank you so much for being up and on the air with us this morning. I know that you probably... Did you have a show last evening?
We did. Yeah. We're in Orange Park, Florida right now.
Oh, well, you know what? I'm envious. What's the weather like there? What's the temp?
It's pretty gorgeous. It's in the 60s. It's kind of perfect.
Oh, well, I know that you had probably a later night, so we do appreciate when people are able to join us for a morning talk show, as you are this morning. Let's talk a little bit, and I did a little research on you, and I see that you have quite a resume, and you actually played a part in one of my all-time favorite shows, which is Grey Gardens. You were Little Edie?
Yes.
I love that show. But
oh, I do too.
and I'm sure for an actor that you get to really delve into that character. That's quite an interesting mm-hmm. show. But this morning we're here to talk really about and focus on Ragtime. So for our listeners who may not know the storyline of the show, can you kind of get just a synopsis of what the show is about?
Sure. It's about an upper-class wife, a Jewish immigrant, and a black man from Harlem trying to find justice and their way through the turn of the century America, and their stories intertwine and come with a pretty powerful message that's still relevant today.
It's almost eerie how relevant it is to mm-hmm. the headlines we're reading every day in this country, as well as headlines across the world, really. Can you speak to that a little more, like flesh it out and how the story kind of unfolds for the characters?
Sure. The black man from Harlem, Cole House Walker Jr., suffers a bit of an injustice towards the end of Act 1, and all throughout Act 2 tries to make it right, and he can't seem to make it happen because, you know, it's kind of unfair for him at that time. And,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, people always ask us how we keep it fresh every day and how we can keep that message still powerful within us, and I just tell them all we have to do is turn on the news for a little while, and we can find some
that is
some new
so
material to draw from.
So yeah. True. I mean, as a cast, as a crew together working on the show, it's I don't know how to really say this and be exact, but it must be difficult, almost painful sometimes. And but yeah, I bet that informs your performance.
Mm-hmm. You know, the thing that bounces us out is our cast is outside of the theater. We're so positive, and we're lucky to have such a positive cast, and mm-hmm. we have a lot of fun together outside of the theater, which is extremely important. It would be a little heavy if we didn't have people like that in our cast.
That's true. That's true. And mm-hmm. you know, of course, as actors, that's what you do. You are able to kind of imbue mm-hmm. a character and go in and out, you know, and become your own self later, mm-hmm. you know, in your regular part of your life. And so you're right. I mean, that balance is critical. But yet, you must realize that this show is unlike, say, a 42nd Street, which is a wonderful show, and we just had it this season ourselves, but different because you might change someone's life with the message they hear in this story. Do you feel that?
Yes,
you do.
Definitely.
Yeah.
That's exactly what we're hoping we're doing. You know, this show couldn't come at a more poignant time. It's just, we feel very lucky to be doing it and being the ones who get to take this message across America.
Right, right. And particularly this year with the, mm-hmm. you know, political season in full swing and, you know, we're about to embark on choosing our next president. I mean, even mm-hmm. more so a show like this is just, you know, I call it the thinking person show, really. No matter which mm-hmm. side of the aisle you're on, and really, I'm not proselytizing for anything here myself, but, you know, mm-hmm. you have to sit back and think a little bit about where we were as a country back at the turn of the century, which is depicted in this show, and where we are today. And boy, even though we feel we've progressed, have we, I guess, is the question. And, you know, the way we treat other people. I think mm-hmm. that's what it sort of boils down to. Would you agree with that? Or,
you know, it's eerie how similar things are in 1902 as they are today. Unfortunately, a lot of the same people still suffer the same injustices. I mean, mm-hmm. at the time of this musical, women were still considered property.
Yeah. Yes.
And,
yeah.
You know, we couldn't vote. We couldn't do anything
right.
like that. So back in those days, it wouldn't even be an issue.
Right. And your character, Mother, actually has quite an evolution within the story, doesn't
mm-hmm.
she?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we like to call her the accidental feminist. You know, she starts off kind of accepting the place that she is, but once she, you know, is made the matriarch of the family and she is takes witness to all these injustices, and she kind of develops her own morals and discovers that they are not exactly the norm, and she needs to stand up and fight for them.
And that's very courageous back then, certainly. And I'm sure, you know, one of the things about this show that's quite interesting is that there's a lot of real people depicted in this show. So mm-hmm. within the story, and when the message that the story is trying to tell, it actually uses real life events or real life people, correct?
Correct. And we've got Evelyn Nesbit, we've got J.P. Morgan, Henry Ford, and a few more in our cast that are real people that are intertwined within the story.
Well, one of the things I think for those who have never seen this show, I want you to come to the show, of course, because I think it's one you don't want to miss. There's also some beautiful music in this show.
Yeah.
And I think you have a couple of those special numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really enjoy singing the music every single night.
And it's music that you do go away remembering.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, when you, it's not like we're in the money, and I don't know why I keep referring to 42nd Street, but it seems like they're just two shows that are totally different and on some very deep levels. But but it's not like that kind of music. But it's music that seems to it sinks in deep in the message
exactly.
and the words.
Right. It's so beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Plants and Arity really know what they're doing.
Yeah. That's for sure. That's for sure. Out of all the different roles you've played, and you've played quite, like I said earlier, you were in Little Edie in Great Gardens, and you've played Elle in Legally Blonde, and you've been Val in Chorus Line. So you have quite a diverse resume, you know, in some straight plays, All My Sons, and you've been in Drowsy Chaperone. What's your favorite role?
Oh, gosh. You know, to be honest with you, I have to say this one. I'm so lucky, really lucky to be where I am today. But a close second, I think, would be Val in Chorus Line, just because it's such a timeless musical, and I had a really wonderful cast that I got very close with, and we had a great time together.
And you're kind of what they call the triple threat, although I don't think there's much dancing and ragtime necessarily for your character, or for the show in general. But there's some great ragtime music. But you sing, dance, act, you do it all.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. And I looked at your picture online. You look very young to have quite you have a lot of background. I think that's a testament to, obviously, if you've been cast in these types of roles, particularly the role of mother, you're playing, you know, a woman that's older than your own true self, I would guess.
Right.
Yes.
Right. But in 1902, not by too much.
Well, I thank you so much. I'm very excited to have you come to our theater. Have you taken a peek and looked at our theater at all online?
I think I was actually there last year. I'm pretty sure Camelot came through Waterbury last year, at least close to it.
Actually, no, it was at one of our other theaters in Connecticut, The Bush Now. So,
that's right.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, you're going to be in for a wonderful treat because the actors who perform at our theater just fall in love. Acoustically, it's just phenomenal. So for a performer, you're going to have a fabulous time. And it was reopened in 2004, and it's spectacular. So you're going to enjoy playing our venue.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome. And I thank you. And we've been talking with Kate Turner, who plays the role of Mother in the upcoming Broadway series production, the national tour of Ragtime, which is coming to the Palace Theater right here in Waterbury, January 22nd and 23rd. Kate, thank you again. And I can't wait to see your performance in a couple of weeks. And we're going to take a break and come back with a local playwright. So you don't want to miss this, and stay tuned. Your palace, your place.
What is assistive technology? Assistive technology is any item or piece of equipment that is used to increase, maintain, or improve the functional capabilities of an individual with or without disabilities in all aspects of life, including at school, at work, at home, or in the community. Hi, this is Charlene from Western Connecticut Area Agency on Aging with your tip of the week. The Western Connecticut Area Agency on Aging Assistive Technology Center provides free personalized or group demonstrations on assistive devices such as magnifiers, phone amplifiers, vibrating alarm clocks, smart pen, and talking watch, just to name a few. These devices are now on display at our Assistive Technology Center located at the WCAAA 84 Progress Lane, Waterbury, Connecticut 06705. Please call Charlene to make an appointment at 203-757-5449.
For the 69th year, a WATR broadcast sports tradition continues. High school basketball weekly throughout the scholastic sports season. Join longtime hosts Ali Vestro, Dave Grant, and producer Bob Sagendorf for a showcase of your favorite Waterbury and Naugatuck Valley teams. High school basketball on air and online at WATR.com and TuneIn Radio. Check out the next exciting game.
Big game tonight, 7 o'clock, Kennedy High School and nationally ranked Sacred Heart High School at 7 o'clock here at WATR, also at WATR.com.
Good morning, Tom, here in our Waterbury area. Some wintry weather in a few pockets tonight. It's not going to be heavy. It's not going to be a lot of precipitation widespread, but because of the type and the locations, which will be sporadic, it could be on the dangerous side. Northern county areas, a winter weather advisory begins 7 this evening till 8 tomorrow morning. Northern Fairfield, northern New Haven counties. Clouds come in today near 40. Tonight, a little bit of drizzle develops, and some of that could be pockets of freezing drizzle the further north you travel, 30 to 35. That drizzle becomes occasional showers tomorrow, low 40s. Rain on Sunday morning, some heavy at times, tapering to showers, breezy, milder, low 50s, and mostly sunny, colder near 35 Monday, and again on Tuesday. This is WATR meteorologist Bill Jackman.
Thank you, Bill. 32 degrees, 946 WATR.
The Waterbury Symphony Orchestra announces Instruments for Kids, Waterbury's first ever musical instrument donation drive to take place through February 7, 2016. Community members are asked to donate instruments in working condition at drop-off sites and or to sponsor the purchase of new instruments for kids in school music programs. Drop-off dates and locations can be seen at watersymphony.org. Please be a part of this great opportunity with the Waterbury Symphony Orchestra, NBCC, and others. Media sponsor, WATR Radio.
It is 946. This is WATR Waterbury, online at WATR.com. And your palace, your place, is on the air with your hostess, Sherry Marcucci.
Jewelry right now. I'm back. I'm talking jewelry right now. Am I repeating myself? Welcome back to Your Palace, Your Place. I'm Sherry Marcucci, and we have with us somebody who I'm so excited that she said yes to this, because she is a local celebrity in her own right now. And as I mentioned early in the show, two things. One is that Your Palace, Your Place is about all things theater. And so we're so happy to be talking about a production that's actually coming to our own Seven Angels Theater right here in Waterbury and opens next weekend. But with us right now is Elizabeth Petricone. Petricone?
Petricone.
Petricone. I should know that. Sherry Marcucci Petricone. But
please, no one ever says it right.
Petricone. And Elizabeth is the author of, is memoir the correct term?
Genre? No, actually the book is, my book is right. Based on How to Lose Weight.
Okay.
But it describes my early childhood and stuff like that. But when the play was written...
All right, well, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
We are going to talk about the play, but her book is not a memoir, then. It's about, it's Born Fat. And boy, does that resonate for many of us, including myself. I mean, that's a struggle many people, you know, live with. And your book is the triumph over that. It's an inspirational message and how you move beyond that label. You move beyond the such a pretty face label.
Yeah, which, right. Oh, I can't even tell you.
I know. And when you age, let me tell you, as you age, the such a pretty face even starts to go. But anyway, Elizabeth is the author, and it's such a, like I said, it's inspirational. Now, from that book, however, a play was written by Jacques Lamarre, who many people in Connecticut know. He's with the Mark Twain House now, but he's been so many things and a very theatrical gentleman, and also did the other show that came
I
to
Loved, I Lost, I Ate Spaghetti.
That's right.
I Made Spaghetti.
So he is somebody that we know, and local theater people know Jacques' work as well. So he took Elizabeth's work, and you collaborated together, and he turned it into a play that debuted in Philadelphia?
Yes. They debuted in Philadelphia in September.
Okay. And the play, now I was privileged. You were very kind to let me read an early version of the play. And I was reading it and going, oh my goodness. This, and it's a one-woman show, right?
It's a one-woman show.
This is so, you're so brave to allow your story to be told, because there's painful parts to it, but it does end up on a high note.
Oh, yeah, and it's got a lot of comedy to it, too. I mean, you know, if there's anything I know about myself, it's a little self-deprecation doesn't hurt, you know.
You are a very funny lady. And you always have that that laugh that says, oh, what's going on
there?
That,
you know.
So tell the audience a little bit. Tell us from start to, you know, the beginning of the show and where it takes us on your journey.
Well, it starts when I'm 11 years old. Because, and my mother said that, you know, Elizabeth Ann, you were born fat.
When I got a sidebar here. That was just crushing when I read those words.
I know. It's crushing to me, too, because, you know, you want to please your mother. And by the time I was 12, I was 5'7" and a half, and I really only weighed 135 pounds. But at the time, Twiggy was the...
Oh, the icon.
The icon. Yeah. So you had to be, you know, emaciated in order to be, you know. And so I assume my mother wanted me to be emaciated because she... pretty much starved me.
Oh,
and, you know, she would set huge tables of food up because, you know, she was a great cook, very good cook. Mm-hmm. And it would have been easier if she hadn't been. And she would put everyone's dinner out and she would put a can of Slim Fast in front of me.
Oh.
And, you know.
Because everyone else in the family was thin and you were the one that.
I just wasn't up to her
standards.
Her standards.
Oh my! How did that inform your relationship with your mom going into your teen years?
It was terrible.
Yeah,
because it was every diet after that. At 12 years old, I was on the drinking man's diet, which is pretty much Atkins.
Okay.
Right. That was early years.
At 12, you were drinking?
No, I didn't get the privilege of the drinking part. I only got the, no. I couldn't have any fruit, couldn't have very many vegetables, couldn't, you know, lots of things. I would hide food in my room. That's when secret eating started.
Oh.
And honestly, I don't know how I didn't get food poisoning. You know, I'd make mayonnaise sandwiches.
And just keep them in a closet?
And keep them in a closet. Oh, and we lived in the desert.
Your family traveled a lot, right? Your dad was in the military?
Yes, my father was in the Air Force, and he was a test pilot.
Here's a funny sidebar, too. Elizabeth and I, her brother was actually one of my classmates at Wolcott High School.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Matatuck Community College, the precursor to Naugatuck Valley, and knew her husband, but I never met you until many, many years, until the last 10 years, I met you in a weight loss
class.
Yeah, isn't that weird? I feel like we've been spinning in each other's orbit, but around each other.
I even have a picture of you at Matatuck. We posted it. It was one of your the Greek.
Oh, the theater society.
Yeah, the
awards.
Theater society.
Yes, that's right. Isn't that funny?
I know.
But anyway, so we're in your teens now, and you're still struggling. And what comes next in your story?
Well, then I'm in my teens. I'm still trying to lose weight, but you know, I was 5'7" and a half, 135, and still, you know, this was a very difficult thing to lose any more weight than that. Now I realize if I weighed 135 pounds right now, you would be trying to feed me.
Right. I mean, would be a fabulous thing.
That would be way too thin.
Yeah.
You know, and so this went on until I was 20, when my mother passed away. Said she just was constantly, it undermines your confidence.
Sure.
When people don't accept you just the way you are.
Right.
And I feel that, you know, we should try to, you know, cook for our children very healthy and not be on them about their weight. It's your cooking.
Right.
You know,
right. So then you went on to some tumultuous adult relationships.
Oh, yes, I did go on to many tumultuous relationships. And, you know, but because when you feel unloved, you're always looking for love. I mean, that's just the way it is. You're just looking for love. And so you're just going from one person to the next person, looking for someone to validate you personally, when really the only person that can really validate you you is yourself.
Wow. When did you finally come to that realization?
Oh, 3 years ago.
Well, that's honesty for you. Oh, my goodness.
I've never been happier in my life. I'm telling you right now, I have never been happier in my life. And, you know, I think that should give everyone, an older adult, such hope. You know, hope, because as long as your health is reasonable, you can always move forward. I was telling someone yesterday that, you know, some people say, well, you know, I don't have anything to do or whatever. And I'm saying, well, then volunteer to do something, because when you volunteer to do something, it's selfless and selfish.
I like that. You're absolutely right.
Isn't it? Because it's selfish, and because you feel so great when you do good things.
Absolutely.
And it's selfless because you're giving your time.
Absolutely.
And anyone can do this. You can go anywhere. So I found that me helping people lose weight was my way.
And we should say that part of your journey, you started, you lost weight. You went to another weight loss company, and you did lose weight, and you worked for them.
I'm actually on the program that I developed myself. I didn't believe in their program,
right,
but
right.
The man that I was with would not take no from me for an answer of not coming to see him.
Okay.
So that's the only reason why, but I never did that. I just did what I do.
Okay. Okay. So you started your own business called Losing Weight with Elizabeth. And backtrack a little bit, because as part of the play and part of your story, you also lost your only child, right?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
This is 3 months before my son was struck by lightning, is how he passed away. My sister had passed away. And I just didn't want to live. And, you know, you can't, I couldn't commit suicide because, well, my parents just lost their only grandchild and their, you know, their daughter. And so I thought, well, what would be the best thing is I would just eat myself to death. I don't know if anybody's ever seen that movie Fatso, but in it, there's a death of a 27-year-old man. He's very heavy. It's an oversized coffin.
Oh,
and all
yes.
The mourners, though, were going, oh, poor Santino. He loved his food so. And it seemed to me like it wasn't hurting them. So I thought they would say, ah, poor Elizabeth, she loved her food so. She'd be like, it would be okay then. You know, she ate herself to death.
Elizabeth, your story cannot be encapsulated in 6 or 7 minutes. So I'm going to invite our audience to make sure, if you're intrigued, you're hearing about Born Fat, the show coming to Seven Angels Theater, written based on the life story of Elizabeth Petricone, and written by Jacques Lamar. You need to get your tickets. The show opens next weekend. Correct?
Next weekend, yes.
Next weekend, opening night, the 15th, the Friday night, and then there's a big party for the 16th after the show.
I think there's a party, yeah.
So you want to call Seven Angels, and you want to get those tickets, because I think this is one of those shows you really say, everybody's going to be buzzing about, I don't want to miss it. You don't know if they'll extend it or not. We don't know that now. So, who knows what's going to happen?
The thing is that I feel like you're going to walk out of the theater feeling so inspired and motivated.
You are an inspiring person.
It's very uplifting.
And I love what you had to say about people as they age and having a purpose. Do you know offhand the box office number for Seven Angels?
I don't.
You don't. So if you're listening, go to their website or look it up, and you'll find their
Actually,
phone number.
Actually, there is the number right there.
The phone number for Seven Angels is 203-757-4676. So tickets to Born Fat. And also, don't remember, coming up at Elizabeth, thank you so much,
thank
by the way,
for having
being with
me.
Us. Coming up after the news is Larry Rifkin with Talk of the Town. And I just want to say thank you. Don't forget Ragtime coming to the Palace Theater, and Lydia Bastianich, personal and private intimate conversation with her, and moderated by Faith Middleton. Do yourself a favor this weekend. Do something you love with someone you love. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
entertaining, new possibilities.
The Palace Theater, your palace, your place.
Shows for the whole family.
Your radio station for news, talk, and your favorite oldies. 1320 AM WATR, Waterbury.